You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, WEDC, was required to submit a report to the legislature on the economic impact of COVID-19. So the 143-page report is out now. It's called Wisconsin Tomorrow, an Economy for All, and it details how $13.7 billion in federal funds have been used in our state to date. Included in those billions are the PPP, the Payroll Protection Program for small businesses, disaster loans, and CARES Act funding. Are you a small business in Wisconsin? What relief has come down the pipeline? What do you need to stay solvent? We're at 800-642-1234. Missy Hughes is Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Secretary Hughes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
So looking at this report required by the state legislature, what questions is WEDC trying to answer in these pages?
Well, I think the most important thing to recognize is this is a really complex problem that we're facing as a state and as a nation. This is not a tornado touching down in a small town in the middle of Wisconsin. This is something that has impacted every business, every community, and every person in the whole state. And as such, you know, solutions moving forward need to take that into consideration.
So, and the subtitle of this, An Economy for All, implies that the current economy isn't working for some people. Can you explain what is not working?
Well, I think what we saw with the COVID-19 crisis was, despite having a strong economy that was growing in Wisconsin and low unemployment, we saw some weaknesses come through in the system as we stressed it. We saw that childcare is incredibly important to having a healthy economy. And when childcare and schooling became unavailable, you start to saw weaknesses in the system. Healthcare is a huge issue for many Wisconsinites, and especially people of color and communities of color. And we saw that those were disproportionately hit with illness and even death from the COVID-19 crisis. So where we see these challenges are places where we need to turn back now and say, okay, what can we do to strengthen those parts of the system so that our whole economy is stronger as we come out of this?
Minority-owned businesses are represented as such a low percentage of total businesses owned here in Wisconsin. What does your report say about that?
Minority businesses were particularly hard hit throughout this crisis. We've seen small businesses that have just literally shut their doors and gone away. Minority businesses typically are, what I've learned, often are unbanked or underbanked, which means they don't have lines of credit. They don't have relationships with bankers where they can go in and get support. And so we have endeavored at WEDC to lean in particularly hard to try to find those small businesses. We've had an ethnic minority emergency grant program that has helped 890 businesses around the state. And we continue to try to find solutions that will help those businesses.
In your report, it states that, quote, the reality today is many of the jobs previously held in the service industry will not recover and that we need to retrain these workers. What specifically in the service industry are you seeing that won't come back?
Well, let's talk about the restaurant industry. You can imagine that a restaurant before the crisis had two hostesses and four busboys on a particular shift. Now coming back, they might have one hostess and two busboys because they just don't have as much capacity coming into their restaurant. Either they've come back with 25 or 50% capacity in order to meet social distancing requirements, or they're just not seeing the customers coming back. And so now we've got, you know, one hostess and two busboys who don't have their jobs and those jobs aren't coming back. So we need to be thinking about what kind of skills do those individuals need to be able to re-enter the workplace. Heading into the COVID-19 crisis, we were searching for folks to move to Wisconsin and to help shore up our industries. And so now we have an opportunity to take the individuals whose jobs have gone away, get them the right skills, and get them into family-sustaining jobs.
We're talking with Secretary Missy Hughes, heads up the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, and her agency's new report documents the economic effect of COVID-19 on Wisconsin to date, and it traces where federal dollars are going. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Jim in La Crosse. Hi, Jim.
Oh, my name's Tim, but thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi, Tim.
I was just listening to the conversation, and maybe she could let people know or clarify. We are at the beginning initially, and it's become pretty obvious to me and others that we're at the beginning of this COVID-19. We're, you know, a year or more away from a possible vaccine. So how is her office able to kind of come to these decisions and know the numbers yet? Because we're just getting really started if you look at the timeline of it. So how are we supposed to – there's no valid numbers the way I see it on, you know, returning to workplace and what we need to do that. Mm-hmm. I would say I do appreciate the discussion because it is really good that we're having this discussion early on rather than, you know, at the end of it, as we come to the end of it. But just some of her statements seem to be saying that, you know, there's certain of this or there's a certainty to it.
So you're feeling like this is pretty premature when COVID really hasn't played out yet. Secretary Hughes?
Yeah, I really appreciate Tim's comments, and I think I agree with all of them. We were asked by the legislature back in the middle of April to provide this report by June 30th. And I don't think anybody really anticipated that we would still be seeing this unfold the way it is. You know, we've talked about a second wave coming in the fall, but to see this happening right now, and certainly as we wrote the report, we grappled with exactly what Tim is saying. I think the things that we identified as priorities to consider are things that will endure, reskilling workers, fixing broadband and supporting innovation are big, broad themes that we landed on because exactly what Tim is talking about. We're still playing this out and seeing this unfold, and it's a real challenge. And I think, you know, the other piece I would say to Tim and to everybody is the best chance we have for a full economic recovery is in taking the efforts now to stop the spread of the virus, social distancing, wearing masks, hand washing, and being, you know, very cautious is the way we can start to regain momentum in our economy. And that's really the key that I think will unlock all of these other pieces.
What's been the impact on state tax revenue as you look at it at this point in the pandemic?
We anticipate a real hit to state tax revenue. We'll know more after July 15th. If you recall, the income tax deadline was extended until then, and so we'll really see the full impact of this on the state's budget and on state revenue. We've already seen you know, challenges with sales tax and with the fuel tax, so we will continue to understand that and see that unfold, but we anticipate a real hit to that revenue.
Corporate tax revenues expecting to be up. How does that work?
You know, the numbers, the challenge with the numbers right now are that they reflect what was happening in the first quarter. And so we have numbers that looked, you know, positive in the first quarter. Now we'll see how those continue. Although I will say, you know, my conversations with the larger industries in Wisconsin, the larger companies, they continue to do well. They stayed open during the pandemic. They have concerns about the future, which is, you know, what Tim expressed also, this concern about what's going to happen with the economy, what's going to happen with orders for big equipment, things like that.
WEDC Secretary Missy Hughes is with us on the evolving economic story of COVID-19 in Wisconsin. Her agency just released a report to the legislature. Did your business receive federal CARES Act funding? How did it help you? And what more would you like lawmakers to do? Join in with your ideas for Secretary Hughes, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, WEDC, is out with a new report for the legislature The analysis is, quote, a stake in the ground, as the report says, identifying the impacts of COVID-19 that we know today. And it breaks down the effects on major industries like agriculture, forestry, tourism. It examines different sectors like healthcare and education. And it documents the economic decline of tribal nations and minority businesses. How is your livelihood affected? Are you getting help for your small business? What are the roadblocks and what have been the saving graces amid this crisis? Join in 800-642-1234. WEDC Secretary Missy Hughes stays with us. Secretary, your agency's report found that about 700,000 people had applied for unemployment from mid-March until the end of June yesterday. Do you have a sense of how unemployment is impacting the overall economy here in Wisconsin?
Well, I think that it's been a saving grace for many in that service worker industry that we were talking about earlier. It's helped the businesses be able to close their doors, but know that their employees were taken care of. It's a critically important part of the piece of this puzzle. As we see things rolling forward, we know that at the end of July, the extra $600 a week is going to end per the federal government. And that's why one of the things that we recommend is to continue advocating with the federal government for every resource that we can get, because it's going to be critical to helping Wisconsin and the rest of the country recover from this.
And so you trace where this $13.7 billion in federal funding is going, some of that through the CARES Act. Where did the CARES Act money go so far?
Well, the CARES Act funding was particularly meant to help states with the costs incurred around the public health crisis. So testing and paying for the National Guard to do the testing, setting up temporary facilities, healthcare workers, all of that was by and large where that money went. We were also able to use some of those funds to help small businesses with our We're All In grant program. We've received over 30,000 applications for that, and we're processing those right now. We were able to help the farmers around the state with direct payments. So a lot of that has been used for public health, but also trying to get it into the hands of our businesses.
It seems like there are a flurry of grant programs, both on the federal and state level. But as a small business owner, how do they make sure that, you know, none of those programs that they are eligible for, that they are aware of them and that they don't escape them or fall through the cracks?
Yeah, it's been really a challenge because of so much information coming at everybody in, just constant stream, especially for our small businesses. We've created at WEDC a page called Focus Forward. And if small businesses are interested in a good source of, you know, what are the current resources that are available, I would encourage them to visit our page at WEDC.org. I also would really encourage folks to pay attention in the next few days to what happens with the PPP, the Payroll Protection Program, that's available through the Small Business Association. That was due to close yesterday. Still had $130 billion available, and Wisconsin has punched above its weight in accessing those funds, and I would really encourage businesses. It's a very friendly tool. It's a little challenging to apply for because there's a lot of hoops, but it's worth it. Work with your local bank or your credit union and apply for those funds.
All right. So looking at this road to recovery, and you're looking at several strategies for helping the state's economy recover, what is... You know, you mentioned broadband. How do you fix broadband?
Well, the PSC has been working on several different strategies.
Public Service Commission.
I'm sorry. Yeah. No, the alphabet soup. The PSC has been working on several strategies. And what we need to do is come together and look at those strategies and agree as a state, this is how we're going to move forward. And like we said in the report, this is something that we can overcome in the state to make sure that everybody has accessible and affordable broadband.
Well, let's take a call now. Jeff is in Door County. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. I've always wondered why it was that the unemployment went to an extra $600 a week on top of the regular benefits, because up here we're a resort community and people are being paid double what they would make under unemployment than they would if they would work. And so this resort community is in a situation where it's like they can't find workers in restaurants and things like that because the people are literally making 3 and 4 times what they would have made if they worked. So I never understood the extra $600 a week.
Which will end at the end of this month, by the way, July 25th. Is that right, Secretary Hughes?
I believe that's right. I appreciate the question from Jeff. I have also talked with businesses that have been really challenged to get workers to come back because, frankly, they're making more than they would have been if they had stayed in their job. You know, some of the decisions that have been made over the course of the last few months were made in a new situation that none of us have been in before. And so wanting to make sure that folks who were quickly left out of their jobs had the resources to be able to take care of their families, I think was the prevailing reason behind that $600. And, you know, as with anything, there are consequences to the decisions. Hopefully, with the benefit of some time, we'll be able to think about this going forward. What we want to make sure is that folks have enough resources to take care of themselves and their families.
We're talking with Secretary Missy Hughes, head of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, and her agency's new report documents the economic effect of COVID-19 on our state to date, tracing federal dollars as well. With your insights, 800-642-1234. Secretary Hughes, on the issue of creating financial stability for Wisconsinites. I mean, looking at that through the framework of, you know, there's a major backlog of processing unemployment claims, more than 500,000 unpaid Wisconsinites out of work, unemployment sitting at 12%. We'll get new numbers soon. And the state isn't tapping its rainy day fund to help. So how do you create economic stability for residents?
Well, once we have a full view after July 15th of the sales tax and the income tax impact, we'll be looking at that rainy day fund and understanding how do we balance our budget in the face of all of this. But I think, you know, you're pointing out the unemployment system challenges is a good one. We have to look at places where we haven't invested in the last few years, and we need to be thinking about how do we support our systems, how do we support our schools and our college system. Defunding and not investing puts you in a place where when you stress the system, these things become real challenges. So we have lessons to learn from the COVID-19 crisis, and I hope that this report provides a way for us to have a conversation moving forward about how to make sure we are providing that financial stability and that economic well-being for every citizen in the state.
You're also looking to create pilot programs for entrepreneurs. What do you want to do there?
Well, one of the things that you see in a recession or, you know, perhaps a depression that we're headed into is an aversion to risk. People don't want to start a new business or take their invention to market. But that's where you see real recovery. That's where you see jobs being created and real opportunity for new markets and new industries. And so as a state, if we can support that innovation, that entrepreneurial spirit, we can hopefully launch our recovery farther and faster than if we didn't.
But that also involves risk and also involves equity, angel investors, which Wisconsin didn't really fare well before this hit, before COVID-19 hit.
Well, we've seen some real positive moments in Milwaukee and Madison with startups and entrepreneurs being able to access more venture capital. What we need to think about is continuing that success, but also how can we have venture capital out into the rest of the state, into the La Crosses and the Eau Claires and up north? You know, I just was part of a really exciting conversation up in Forest County. So there's opportunities, and I think if we all start talking about it and put energy behind it, we'll be able to find that venture capital. We've got resources here in Wisconsin. We are a strong state as far as our industries go, and I think there's opportunity for investment.
Let's bring in Tom in Madison. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I just wanted to address the comments on the previous caller who was lamenting the fact that, you know, businesses can't hire workers because those workers are getting the extra $600. And frankly, if those businesses paid a living wage, this would not be an issue. So I think those tourist-related businesses need to be paying living wages, and then they don't have to worry about the so-called extra earnings during a global pandemic.
Secretary Hughes, very quickly.
Yeah, Tom is pointing out that the two sides to this challenge. One is making sure that folks have a living wage, that they can take care of themselves and their families. And the other is making sure that the businesses can stay open and those especially those family-owned businesses can keep those jobs available.
Last few moments here. How do you want the legislature to use this document?
I hope that the legislature uses this document as a way to set priorities and to have conversations going forward. We need to all be working together to find solutions for Wisconsin, and I hope that this document provides an opportunity for those conversations to start.
Secretary Hughes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Missy Hughes, Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Coming up, we circle back to the Sherman Park neighborhood of Milwaukee for years after protests erupted over a city police officer fatally shooting Sylville Smith. Do you live in Sherman Park? Join the conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're zooming in now on the Sherman Park neighborhood of Milwaukee and hearing about Sherman Phoenix and its economic justice efforts here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Sherman Phoenix is a hub of dozens of small businesses that grew out of the unrest sparked by Sylville Smith's death in 2016. Milwaukeeans, have you been to Sherman Phoenix? What would you like to share with its founders? Are you a Black entrepreneur? What was your path like to becoming a business owner? Join in at 800-642-1234. Clyde Anderson is general manager of Sherman Phoenix. He's an entrepreneur, author, and former CNN analyst who has worked with a variety of businesses. Clyde, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Jan Anderson is here, Director of Programming and Events for Sherman Phoenix. Jan, welcome to you.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, I want you to take us back to 2016 when Sylville Smith died after being shot by police. And this sparked protest. It sparked civil unrest in Sherman Park. You know, Clyde, as a person in Milwaukee, what were your thoughts at that time?
Well, you know what's interesting? I was born here in Milwaukee, and for several years we were living down in Georgia. And so I came home actually right after it happened. And so I was here after sort of feeling the after effects and seeing what was going on and looking at the neighborhoods that I once remembered that looked a lot different. And so that was sort of my first understanding. I was watching from afar as it was happening. It was breaking my heart to see what was happening to my community. But then to come home and really see it firsthand, it was really rough, which is why, this has been such a beacon of light for us.
Jan, what was it like coming to Milwaukee at that time?
Wow. I am not originally from Milwaukee. I am originally from Detroit. And coming from Georgia about 3 years ago, just seeing how... to be honest with you, how segregated Milwaukee is. I mean, it was a bit of a shock for me coming from Georgia, where you see a lot of African-Americans just doing well within the city. And coming to Milwaukee, it was really pretty much a segregated city. And then being a part of the Sherman Park neighborhood, especially hearing the history behind it and seeing what rose out of the ashes, the Sherman Phoenix, and being a part of that amazing project, it kind of gave me hope that things are possible to turn around.
How did you get the idea for Sherman Phoenix? How did this come about and it come together, Clyde?
Well, it was really the brainchild of Joanne Sabir and Julie Kaufman. They were actually, Joanne was looking for a bigger space for her juice kitchen, a restaurant, or a juice bar, and looked at the Sherman Park area and had decided on the spot. And right when she decided is when the unrest happened in 2016. And the BMO Harris building was right across the street from the land that she had identified. And so once that happened, the BMO Harris was one of the buildings that was burned. This building has been around for over 100 years. It's been a bank since the 20s. And so this was burned during the unrest in the Sherman Park neighborhood. And the building was damaged, but it was a solid structure. And so they were able to really kind of decide to move instead of making this Jews kitchen across the street. Let's do something bigger. And so what became Sherman Phoenix, and the whole idea was rising from the ashes. They were able to refurbish this building and bring in 27 tenants. And these were people that they had come across, had known or worked with, and they were small business owners or wanted to be small business owners. And they decided to bring them all inside and make it one community. And so that's the beginning of it.
So this bank turns from a bank into this hub of entrepreneurs looking to get their startups off the ground, looking to get their restaurant ideas going. When you walk into this space, Jan, can you tell us, give us a picture of what we can see?
Wow. When you walk inside the building, you see smiling faces, people ready to greet you with hugs. Everyone knows each other. Everyone knows each other by name. And if we don't know you by name, we ask you, hey, what's your name? Where are you from? What are you doing here? What's going on? It's just a feeling of community and family. And I think that's what makes Sherman Phoenix so special, is that we all come together and we all love each other. It's one big happy family. And you can feel that excitement and that energy, and that attracts people to the building.
Jan, yeah. how do the tenants help each other out?
Wow. That's a really cool thing about Sherman Phoenix. And that's something that you won't see any place else like it, retail wise, marketplace wise, is that the tenants all come together to help each other with marketing ideas, sales strategies, different promotion ideas. What can we do to build our business? What can we do to grow? And everyone's willing to help. They also collab with each other to come up with different, products or promotions to offer consumers. I know that pizza and spring rolls and popcorn all came together to offer quarantine combo pack to customers during the quarantine. So they always come together to try to help each other grow and to try to help each other expose them to other customers. So they help each other a lot, and we're really grateful for that.
We're talking with Jan and Clyde Anderson, who helped found Sherman Phoenix, a business and community center in Milwaukee with dozens of entrepreneurs and startups. We're hearing about the project and taking your questions. Are you a Black entrepreneur? What has your experience been like? What policies would you like to see to address systemic challenges for people of color in business? Join in 800-642-1234. Clyde, how have you seen this pandemic affect the Sherman Phoenix tenants and the community you've created there?
Yeah, it's interesting. The first 2 years of business are generally the roughest for any entrepreneur. And so we opened about 18 months ago. And so when the pandemic hit, it was devastating to small businesses that were just sort of getting in their stride. We just sort of found that rhythm. And so to have to stop abruptly and sort of reconfigure is rough for anyone. And so for entrepreneurs, it's definitely challenging. You have to really kind of go back through and sometimes rethink the model and do different things. So we saw a lot of challenges, but one of the things that we were able to do is waive rent for the tenants for about 3 months, which helps. Again, it speaks back to the community and why the Sherman Phoenix was created to be this sort of incubator of sorts to help the tenants. And so that was hard. So we stayed, you know, with the tenants, and we continued to work with them throughout the pandemic just to make sure that they were okay, one, mentally, and then also that they were having a strategy or thinking through what the comeback would be for them or what other avenues that they could use to make revenue during this time. So we all have gifts and talents, and we like to see how we can apply them in different ways. So we work with them to do that. The beauty is that we saw some of the tenants pivot. We saw some of them that were able to really sort of come back stronger than they were before because they found new product lines. They tried something different and they were innovative. And I think that's that energy as well. So it's definitely been a challenge with the pandemic. But I think in any adversity, we always see opportunity as well if you look for it.
Well, I'm wondering how your tenants have navigated this time where there are grant opportunities, there are federal dollars flowing through, for instance, the PPP. And we know that businesses, particularly minority business owners, are usually more obstructed to access to capital. And so that can be an issue. How is that going?
Yeah, this is true, and it's definitely an issue across the board. And what we did was making sure that we researched all the available grants and we made sure they knew what was out there. So every week we were sending them grants. And what we found is that some of them were able to take advantage of them. We definitely have some that it just didn't fit, or for some other reasons they didn't qualify or get the funds. But we did have some tenants that were successful. We've had some tenants that have received over $60,000 in grants. And they're still going and applying for some as they're still out there. So we've seen across, but we've definitely seen some grants come in and help. I think we find a lot of the challenges on the other side when we're trying to deal with some of the loans. That's really, I think, where we see some of that that problems with accessing the capital. And so we're also conscious of that and trying to find partners, because a project like Sherman Phoenix would not have happened with traditional financing. We could not have went to a bank and said, you know, give us $4.5 million to make this deal work. On paper, it doesn't make sense, but it becomes more about people than it is about profit.
How did the financing come together?
Well, it's really sort of a crowdfunding that happened. And so we began there. So the community actually owns it. And you ask how the community feels. I think that's why the community is so involved as well, because we were able to offer this pieces of this to the community and they could invest in as low as $1,000. So that was one of the ways. But we also had philanthropic partners. We had athletes. We've had some foundations that came on board. They saw the mission. They had worked with Julie in the past or worked with Joanne in the past and knew their hearts and knew what they were about and what they wanted to achieve in the community. And I think that becomes infectious. You know, when you have a vision and you share it, it can become contagious. And I think that's what happened and got people on board to raise those funds and to open the doors.
Well, Jan, you know, community being at the core of Sherman Phoenix, what is it like for you when you can't put on events, when you can't bring prospective customers together or this community that has grown up together?
Oh, it is so hard, to be honest with you. It's been really challenging. However, I've really been trying to figure out a way that we can still have people come together inside Sherman Phoenix, but of course, remain safe for social distancing. We have a lovely patio outside that has been reconstructed, revamped. And so we have a lovely green space outside where there are spaces for people to sit outside of rocks. And we have some tables and chairs that we want to put outside so people can still come and gather, but they would be outside. We also have started doing events in our parking lot the days that we've been closed on Sunday and Monday. So the community has really used that parking lot as a way to have small events. It does hurt, but the main thing is that the community stays safe. Everyone stays safe. And we will have events again. We will be there again. But it's really figuring out what that looks like and how we can bring people together and still remain safe.
We're talking with Jan and Clyde Anderson about Sherman Phoenix. It's the business and community center in Milwaukee in the Sherman Park neighborhood. How has your community been affected by the protests against police violence? What are you hoping comes next in terms of small businesses? What type of growth and community engagement would you like to see? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Clyde and Jan Anderson in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. It has been 4 years since the uprising in the Sherman Park neighborhood of Milwaukee following the death of Sylville Smith. And a community and business center called Sherman Phoenix came out of that time. Its mission to lift up entrepreneurs who've been discriminated against. And that work is more urgent than ever in the wake of George Floyd's death and protests against racial oppression. So what economic policies do you think Wisconsin leaders can enact to address systemic racism and business ownership? What do you think should be done to support business development in communities of color? Join in now, 800-642-1234. We have Sherman Phoenix founders Clyde and Jan Anderson who stay with us. So Clyde, what percent of the tenants are selling food in Sherman Phoenix? I ask that because restaurants have had such a hard time as of late.
Yeah, that's one of the big challenges we see. We have 7 food vendors currently in the building in our food hall, in our main food hall. And so it's been definitely a challenge because right now we're curbside and carry out only. One of the things in the past that I think we really prided ourselves on is people coming inside of our atrium, having a seat and really congregating and making connections and doing those things that you do in a coffee shop or just amongst friends. And so they've had a hard time just really kind of doing that. Like I say, some people have been able to pivot and offer other things. For example, we have a spring roll, a Funky Fresh spring roll, who started doing frozen spring rolls, which was innovative. And it's helped his business really through the pandemic to survive and now thrive afterwards.
So, you know, you're looking at many different paths for these businesses. Have any of these entrepreneurs talked with you recently and said, hey, Clyde, I don't know if I'm going to make it here. I don't know if I'm going to come back.
You know, what's interesting is I've had these conversations with them as we try to talk through things. And I haven't had anybody that say that I can't, you know, it has been how. And I think that's what, if, you know, is how do we do it? Is how do I shift? And so we've had those conversations of what may it take to shift? And sometimes it's bringing other people that know more. It's maybe mentors or people who have been down a road similar in the past as it relates to being in the restaurant business. And so we find that's really important. So we have 27 small businesses, 25 of them are owned by people of color. And so, as you mentioned earlier, it can be challenging for people of color, whether it's capital access or just really sort of running the day to day, especially in those first 2 years. And so I'm seeing the challenges, but as I say, I'm seeing them persevere. No one as of yet has said, I can't do this. I'm changing. I'm going to go do something else. And so we're hoping that we don't have that. But our role is to support them to make sure that they don't have to make that decision. And if they do, what's the best decision for the next phase of their lives to pivot?
Have you talked with other Sherman Phoenix type approaches in outside of Wisconsin? Are there others doing this model, and how is it working?
I know, and you know what's interesting is it's probably 225 food halls across the country. I haven't found any that are really exactly like ours. They're similar in different ways. The thing that's unique for us and that we really ran into as we were trying to reopen is that we're a mix of a food hall. We have yoga. So we have health and wellness. We have beauty things. We have a beauty shop, a barber shop, a massage therapy. And so where I say it's like a town inside of a town. But we have maybe 4 different industries that are happening. And so I can't just follow the model of a food hall. I have to kind of look at retail space as well and what the malls are doing, too. So we have that sort of hybrid thing going on. So we definitely lean on some of our peers and partners. But it's also a little bit challenging because none of them are really just like us.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Clyde Anderson, general manager of Sherman Phoenix. It's a business community center food hall in Milwaukee. Jan Anderson, director of programming and events. You can join in. Have you been to Sherman Phoenix? What would you like to share about it? We're at 800-642-1234. So, Jan, as you work with your tenants in the coming weeks and months, I'm sure you're watching the COVID numbers every day. But you're also in a city that has really been affected by the George Floyd protests, and certainly Sherman Park has those scars as well after Sylville Smith. What has it been like over the past month and watching these protests?
Wow. It's been heartbreaking, but it's also been uplifting as well to see that the community once again is coming together to support our community. The interesting thing about Sherman Phoenix is that when the riots happened in 2016, they happened on a Friday, and on a Monday, the community came together in the streets and said, you know what, this isn't going to be the legacy of this neighborhood. This isn't going to be what's left. We're going to come together and figure out what happens next. And so when Joanne Sabir and Julie Kaufman came to that neighborhood with the Sherman Phoenix idea, it was just a phenomenal opportunity, and everybody gravitated to that. And I think that what we see now and the protests and just the spirit of what happened in the past. People still remember that, and they remember that, you know what, this happened once before, and we came together before. And from that, rising from the ashes, came Sherman Phoenix, which is something that is amazing, and it's so positive, and it's so needed in the community. And I think that people remember that. So when we're protesting, especially in the Sherman Park neighborhood, that same resilience, that same power, that same energy comes back to mind, and it allows us to keep going, because Sherman Phoenix is an example of what can happen from a tragedy, Clyde, in a neighborhood.
Yeah, Clyde, do you feel that same energy in Sherman Park?
I do. And we've had a rally at our building, a youth rally, which was really powerful to see the people coming out. And again, that the building has so much significance because of what it was birthed from. And so it's an energy, I think, that you feel as you're there, and you know what's going on and the times we're in. And so it's really important, but I think it's recognized. We've had a lot of the activists come through. We've had a lot of the community leaders that are coming through, and we're able to have these conversations. And I think that's what's opening up to having more dialogue like this. And so we want to be that space. We want to be the hub for those conversations. Is, you know, we're at a location where some people may not venture to go. You know, we're located on Fond du Lac and 35th, where in the past, you know, some people may shy away or certain people may shy away from it. But Sherman Park was a thriving community. And so it can be, and it's becoming a thriving community again. So to see the protests and the peaceful protests, it's great. To see us, you know, really not letting down, because in the past we've had a lot of false starts. And I think this is one that, you know, we're seeing some change happen, and it feels good to see that. It's hard to get to it, but it feels good seeing.
All right. This isn't quite the fair question, because it's like picking your favorite child. But Jan, do you have a particular tenant that you really, really love for their product?
Well, I know. That's so unfair.
I know.
Okay, well, I do have to get a shout out to my hairstylist, Latrice Nelson, over at Shampooed in Sherman Phoenix. That's where I get my hairstyle. So, of course, that would have to be a favorite, because she keeps my coif impeccable. So, but outside of that, you know, everybody offers something a little different. Like I was saying, we have the wellness, we have food, we have culture, we have a bar inside of there. I mean, there's so many different things. So I guess it depends on the day, what I'm in a mood for, but there's always something for me every day. So it's really hard to pick that favorite, but I would definitely say Shampoo. That's my personal favorite.
Clyde, you're not off the hook. You gotta pick you.
I thought I might have missed that one.
Oh, no.
I think it is. And Jan hit it. It's on the day. So some days I'm in a mood for a spring roll. Some days it's pizza. Some days I just want some popcorn from Lush or some baked goods from Confection Lior's. So it just really depends. And they all do a great job. And they all have these just delicious things that some days you may need to stay away from. And so it's all about moderation and balance. But I'm so proud of all of them. For really staying the course and doing what they're doing. But yeah, it just really depends on the day.
Clyde, in the last few moments we have, how do you keep yourself going? Where do you find hope? How do you keep going?
You know, I find hope in my Instagram title is Clyde on Purpose. And I feel purpose is what keeps me going. It's a focused purpose of I know what I'm here for. I know why I came home. You know, I've been in Atlanta for 24 years and Dwayne Spear asked me to come back. And so that's why I'm home, because it's purposeful. It's for us to make a difference. And for a time such as this, I had no idea any of this would happen. But I was sort of listening to that voice that said, go. And we went and we came and we answered the call. And so I think that really does it.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us, both of you.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Yes,
thank you for having us.
Clyde Anderson, General Manager of Sherman Phoenix, Jan Anderson, Director of Programming and Events. Just ahead, we spend the hour discussing elections and voting with a constitutional expert. What confuses you about your country's voting process? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.